On Pilot TV this week, we are Playing with Fire alongside Taron Egerton and Journey Smollett in Smoke on Apple TV+, Going Undercover with Jensen Ackles in Countdown on Prime, and getting embroiled in the knotty politics of, well, retail politics under the auspices of Nick Frost in Transaction on ITVX. Plus, Christina Hendricks is back on the show this week discussing her time as a Buccaneer. I'm James Dyer, and welcome to Pilot TV, your essential guide to every show that matters and a podcast that is still reeling from the revelations concerning Kay's buoyancy from last week's Pilot Plus. But for that conversation and to understand precisely why Kay has resisted all attempts to teach her to swim, you will need to subscribe. And why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you subscribe? Because it's only $3.49 a month and comes with a bounty of added value, including a second weekly episode, spoiler specials, ad-free listening to this regular podcast, and access to it a full 17 hours earlier than everyone else. It is, of course, a steal. And of course, while we're soliciting your money, a reminder that tickets are currently on sale for the Pilot TV 350th episode celebratory live show, which takes place on Friday, the 8th of August at 7 p.m. at King's Place in London. Google Pilot TV 350 King's Place and join us for what is apparently shaping up to include an impromptu game of Would I Lie to You? I mean, God help us. It's going to be anarchy. But anyway, enough shameless plugging, because we have a show to do. And here to help me, of course, are my two co-pilots, venerable TV critic and notorious censorer of caricatures, Boyd Hilton.
Censorer of caricatures that are borderline offensive. Yeah, I just didn't want to, you know, I just don't want to land the artist slash correspondent in trouble.
Okay,
people will have been so angry.
Well, I like to think, you know, if you don't subscribe to Pilot Plus, then you will not understand that reference, but suffice it to say, it's hilarious. And also, of course, with us is the unusually dense fearer of large bodies of water, it's Kay Ribeiro.
I'm really regretting telling you about my
density.
My density, because now I know this is a joke that will run and run, but it's true. I can't float.
You can't float. No. You just sink to the bottom like a stone.
Maybe when you're on the coast of Italy, as you are next week, dealing with Johnny Depp and stuff.
Johnny Depp's not going to be.
Kevin Spacey. That was a genuine mistake on my part, because I made a joke earlier.
You spanned the roulette wheel of cancelled sort of men in cinema.
Sorry, Kevin Spacey. When you're hanging out with Kev, you should. It's an opportunity to take a dip, isn't it, in the ocean. It could be a magical experience.
It could be. Well, let's just say this might be our last podcast if I do that.
Oh God, that's
it. Yeah. Should be at the bottom of the sea.
And then everyone will have evidence that you suggested I do it as well. So going down a very dark road. No, keep me out of, as James says, large bodies of water.
I think so. Well, you know, we've had a busy week. I was in two places at once last night, which was exciting. very, very interesting. So I went to an event with Idris Elba and Stormzy. But apparently, Boydy, I was also at a screening of 28 Years Later.
Yes. I was convinced. I was chatting away. I was talking about you to a friend sitting there waiting for the film to start. And then this, you know, bald guy of your rough
just
description.
A bald guy.
Running down the stairs. I thought, there he is. There's James. And I got him from there he is.
Was it Harry Hill?
It could have been. I mean, now.
Tucci. It could be so
could
many
be any of the great baldies, of our time. But have you seen it already then?
I have seen it already.
Fine. I was thinking, you must be then. So, fine. Yeah.
And they all look the same to you, Boyd.
They do.
White, bald.
Right. We all look the same.
It is true. The difference with James and me, the salient difference is that he's much taller than I am. He's got his proper height, whereas I'm
small. If you have your Cuban heels on.
I don't wear Cuban heels, okay? I'm fine with my lack of height. I've come to terms with it. My brother was on the radio this morning talking about this issue, height being short, and how it's affected his life. And I'm sitting there going, that's fine. I don't really care. I'm not that short.
I mean, supermarket shopping is the big thing, really, isn't it? You
know? Yeah.
But other than that,
it's fine. Yeah, thank
you. High shelves.
Yeah.
Well, we're a couple of shorties and we've got James to balance us out.
Yeah. I'm the podcast reacher.
You're a giraffe.
I then went to the Raindance Film Festival party.
Was I there or just
don't think you were there, though you could have been. I saw Jason Isaacs and Lenny James, among others. That was exciting.
Look at you both with your star-studded parties.
And then I had to go home. And watch episodes of Karen Pugh, because I did interviews with Karen Pugh people this morning.
A treat.
Yes, love that show. And I forgot, when I got back, I was thinking, I'll be fine, I'd watch the first episode, get it done. The interviews this morning, I remember the episodes are 2 hours long.
Oh my God.
There's 3 2-hour,
What time did you go to bed?
I initially went to bed at 2:30. But you know what? I could have just watched the first one.
Yeah.
And then thought that, yeah, because you get the basic gist, but it's so addictive. It is so compelling. I just carried on. So I ended up watching two-hour episodes.
That's why
so
you've got matchsticks keeping your eyes open.
So if I'm just delirious and nonsensical,
yeah,
even more nonsensical than usual, and even find it even more difficult to remember the names of the people whose shows we're reviewing, that's why.
Mm. Fair enough. Deeply fatigued.
Deeply fatigued, yeah. And then just to draw the veil open, keep the veil open, I interviewed the people from Current Period this morning, Lauren Lyle, who plays the title character, and Ian McKenney, who is the showrunner.
Podcaster, Lauren Lyle.
Lauren Lyle, exactly. Mm. And all-round talent and a joyous person, Ian McKenney, who's the showrunner of it and is also in it. And the podcast interview wasn't recording for the first like 5 to 10 minutes.
No.
Yeah, we discovered. And so I had to go
that
back.
That's my worst. Yeah, I had to, as any interviewer knows, that's
they're
the
so
worst
nice, though.
Nightmare.
These two are so nice. They were like, oh, it's fine. We're actresses. We can, like, you know, just pretend you're answering this question for the first time. And I decided I had to reword my questions a bit.
Yeah, you do. You can't ask exactly the same question. So I can beat that because I was literally sit down face-to-face interview with Nicole Kidman. And we'd got maybe four or five minutes interview before I realised I'd forgotten to press record on the recorder.
That's
and I had to say, Nicole, I am so sorry. Because I haven't been recording any of this.
Yeah.
So she, and again, Gracie, she went, you know what, it's absolutely fine, start again. And I just had to lean into it. I had to start again. I said, Nicole Kidman, thank you very much for your patience in what you were about to do, which is answer exactly the same questions I asked you 5 minutes ago. Oh. And I just made a thing out of it.
She's a good human. She was great.
Yeah.
All the pieces people come out of it well. Yeah. Apart from the actual podcasters. Like me and James.
But this is why I think you should record all interviews on like 18 different devices at any given time.
Oh, that's what I do.
You need redundancy.
I literally sit down at a table, I get my iPhone out, I get different devices, and I'm like, listen, yes, am I being oversensitive? Am I worrying too much? Probably, but let's just be safe.
Yeah, I've been burned before, let's say, and it's been pretty bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good advice.
Good burn, smoke.
Yeah, oh yeah, see, it's all thematic. All thematic. Right,
anyway, isn't 28 years later is way, 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 way better than The Last of Us?
No.
Oh, boy. Why would you? Come on.
Just had to.
It's interesting. So I'm trying to think when the embargo... it's lifted. It's lifted because the review's up.
The film's out tomorrow.
Obviously, it's a film, so we can't talk about it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we're going to talk about it. Actually, we will have already talked about it because this will go out on Monday. I will have reviewed this on the Empire podcast on Friday, so I will have already talked about it. But I thought that it was Kez with zombies. That's my take on it. I was like, it is a Ken Loach film with the
you probably think that's a negative. I consider that
it's a negative, but genuinely, I think that's what it is. I think a lot of people will be surprised by what that film is.
Oh, yeah.
But is it better than The Last of Us? No, it is not. Anyway, let's move on to what we have, in fact, been watching this week. Helen, let's start with you. What have you, presumably from on top of the water as opposed to under it, what have you been watching on the television this week?
Well, primarily, as Pilot Plus listeners will know, I have done a deep dive of Department Q.
You have. You binged the whole thing.
Yeah,
this is professionalism. This right here, that is the face of professionalism.
Yeah, which has never been said to me before.
No,
so
that's
I'm
true.
Like bathing in that.
I am very impressed that you did that, by the way, because you hadn't watched them last week.
I jokingly said,
well, you can watch them on the weekend. And you did.
Yeah. I literally, and actually some episodes while I was in the bath, but in a very safe way, So I was literally in deep water, some kind of water.
So you're in the bath, the bottom of the bath, clearly.
Yeah. I just had my snorkel on.
Yeah,
so anyway. But yes, I watched all episodes of that. We discussed it. I was going to say at length. I wasn't quite happy with the length that we spoke about.
So we did a Department Q spoiler special at the end of this week's Pilot Plus, and these two were like moaning it. We had to cut it short.
These two.
It was over 20 minutes long. Yeah. It was a 20-minute long discussion.
Yeah, the reason why Boyd and I were slightly complaining was because James was in charge of the postbag yesterday because I've been locked out of the account.
Whose fault was that?
Boyd's. No, no one's fault.
Wow.
No, IT. Anyway, so James was in charge, and then he was doing his own triage, which included answering questions about Buffy and a monologue about... What was he talking about? A monologue about...
It's hard to say.
Alien, was it? I don't know.
It was Alien. He literally started a history of the Alien movies.
Yes, he started riffing, doing a soliloquy about that, and then wrapped us up early on Department Q. And I was like, I'd spent 8 hours watching.
I didn't wrap us up early so much as 20 minutes late, but sure.
Yeah.
So we could fit in your Alien theory.
Yeah, exactly.
Unbelievable.
Same. Yeah. Anyway, so I've mostly watched all of that. And also, the only other thing that I watched was a documentary, the first episode of Serena Williams in the Arena, BBC One, which is really good.
That's her going through her career, isn't it?
Yeah, her 27-year career.
Wow.
With she obviously is interviewed, so is Venus and other peers and stuff. But it's fascinating, and God, she is phenomenal. So yeah, I'd recommend that. It'll be on BBC iPlayer.
Good show.
Excellent. Well, what have I been watching? The aforementioned Karen Piri to 2:30 in the morning last night. We will be reviewing that in a couple of weeks' time.
Yes. Best start watching it now.
And you can hear in my interviews with the creator and star in a couple of weeks' time. I also interviewed the creator and star of Such Brave Girls this week as well. Kat.
Right, that's right.
Yes. And so I watched a lot of that new series as well, which is, shall we say, actually, I'm not going to say anything about it because
it's embargoed.
It's embargoed, and there would be a spoiler. But Kat Sadler, who's an absolute delight, and very interesting about her, how she creates the show. Because our own sister's in it, playing a sister. You know, a bit like with the Nabarn Ruzwan
and his brother.
Who we had on stage at our last live.
That's right.
Show. Who knows who we're going to have as a guest on this live show?
Boyd knows.
Yeah. It'll be really whoever Boyd's had dinner with that week. It's going to be that's true.
Yeah, maybe Kat's around. I'm going to
come up with a dream list. By the way,
are you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm already excited.
Dream list.
Okay. We do at some point need to actually have a conversation about what we're going to do on this.
Yeah. Boyd, I'm going to come up with a dream list for you to get for me, please. Thanks.
Okay. Anyway, Such Brave Girls. So I watched a lot of the new series of that, which is embargo, but hopefully we will review that in a couple of weeks as well, depending on whether it's suitable for James's, shall we say...
My comedy aversion.
Your comedy aversion, yeah. You are comedy averse. But so I've been doing a lot of that, watching stuff for interviews this week. It's been a busy week for me. But so I thought I'd take time, you know, to watch something just purely for pleasure that we're never going to review on the show, that, you know, I don't have to watch particularly. So I watched Noel Edmonds' QE Adventure.
I have watched the first episode.
Oh! So,
well, actually half.
Now, just to be clear, is this the thing where he's gone to, is it New Zealand or Australia?
Yes, New Zealand.
And bought,
hence the title, QE.
Bought like a... Oh, sorry, I missed that bit. And bought like a whole town or something with a pub and a thing. Yes. He's created his own weird little survivalist compound
where
he's basically now living.
A well-being.
Yeah.
And
he's
wellness.
He's become a spiritual guru.
He has become...
He's been like
to
that
himself,
for a while.
Mainly.
Yeah,
to be fair to him. He's mainly a guru who to himself.
This is 100% the next series of Alan Partridge, but carry on.
Oh, I mean, it's Partridge. I thought after 10 minutes of listening to him banging on about what he's doing, I was thinking you could literally put this in Partridge's voice if I knew technically how to do it, and it would completely fit.
Yeah. Yeah.
The funny thing is, Steve Coogan has made sure that Alan Partridge hates Noel Edmonds in the fictional world of Alan Partridge, which I am an obsessed and expert. In he refers to him a lot and he hates him.
Well, the whole point isn't it that Alan's never had the success that he felt was owed him, whereas Noel Edmonds, hugely successful.
That's true, except Noel Edmonds was effectively let go by the BBC and his career, you know, and then he had to revive his career later with Neil. He's had his moments.
Partridgean moments. Yeah.
Yeah, but basically it's really funny because it's like Partridge and Scrooge have so much in common, but I think partly because he does recognise himself. I'm talking about Lowe's a real person.
Alan.
Because he recognises in himself some Edmonds qualities. He hates him for it, and it's really interesting psychologically. Anyway, the three-part documentary, yes. So you watched the first part as well?
Well,
okay.
I've only watched halfway through.
Okay.
Yeah.
She was in the bath. Lots of attention.
Yeah. You get prune-like, otherwise staying too long. But put it like this, I watched enough to know that he's still balmy. And I watched the bit where he likened a nail gun to a sex toy.
Oh, he's obsessed with nail guns. He thinks nail guns are the best invention on Earth ever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's among the details are, he has created his own universal energy system. And it involves various different techniques, including crystals. He's obsessed with crystals. You're quite into crystals yourself, aren't you, Kate?
I don't mind a crystal.
He lies on a bed... And has
a crystal bed?
A normal bed.
All right.
But he has a lavish array of crystals hovering above him, which are kind of tied together by string or whatever. But they're constructed to hover there. And he just lies there taking in whatever power these crystals are supposed to be imparting to him. And his poor wife, standing there going, yes,
Liz.
This is what happens, Liz.
They have earthquakes in New Zealand, I'm just saying. I wouldn't want pointy crystals above my head while I'm sleeping.
That's a very good point. He has structured water, Not just normal water.
What is structured water?
It's water that's...
Oh, molecular. Is it something about that?
Yeah, basically, it's like shaking around a lot.
Oh, my God.
So as I can make out, so I'm in the microphone.
SodaStream is what you're saying.
SodaStream water.
Maybe I'll insist that one of you shakes my water before I start to do the podcast.
Would be very in character.
Yeah.
Shake my water, James.
He's created something called VIBE, which stands for Visualization of Body Energy.
Oh, my God. Right. Wouldn't that be Vobe?
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Vibe to him. I haven't finished it. Well, I'm waiting for the best. I'm saving the best to last. He has this. Oh, he's created this thing called The Guardian, which is a massive statue of kind of like a...
Please say it's of him.
A godlike figure, no, wielding a sword. And that is aimed at commemorating the fact that he was ripped off by bankers years ago. He had
the
to dissolve his company.
Deal or no deal.
Not the banker from Deal or No Deal. He had to dissolve his company, basically. And these bankers, and they were... In this example, he's actually right. I was looking into the history of it. He talks about... I can say this because they were jailed. So these people were jailed for exploiting him and ripping him off. Yeah. So he's created this kind of like statue thing to remind him of this extraordinary experience and to give him the strength he needs. And he's kind of almost tearing up as he sees that. But the thing that really, those things are a little bit quasi-moving. But he's also got, guess what? Like in Department Q, a hyperbaric chamber. He's got his own hyperbaric chamber.
Who does he keep in there?
Himself.
Boyd, Mr. Blobby. Mr. Blobby
pops up in episode 2. By the way, genuinely, he's like, I'm halfway around the world and I'm haunted by Blobby. You're right, yeah, you are. So yeah, he's got a hyperbaric chamber.
What's he doing there?
What viewers of Department Q will know is a key element of that storyline is the hyperbaric chamber. He goes in there and does whatever happens. I don't know what it does. I mean,
listen, what happens in the chamber stays in the chamber. Yeah.
Listen to our spoiler special about what happened to the hyperbaric chambers in Department Q. We won't spoil it. But yeah, he has that. So it's an extraordinary insight into... Because I remember Noel Edmonds from when I was growing up. I watched Noel's House Party. I did interview him once, I did. And he had various extraordinary shows, varying from outright terrible to kind of just mainstream showbiz, Saturday night stuff.
House Party.
But he had the biggest show on TV. House Party, I think, was like one of the biggest shows on TV at one time. So he was absolutely hugely
famous.
And
also radio.
Radio, huge star, and Deal or No Deal. And then he did have a dip in his career, which he's obviously bitter about. And then came back with Deal or No Deal, which made him a superstar all over again because that was a massive hit on Channel 4, for Channel 4, when he revived. So he is a fascinating figure, honestly.
Listen, you've made me want to watch the rest of it.
But you know what it is? It's like Clarkson's, what's it called? Clarkson's Farm.
Don't say that, because Noel has talked, when he was interviewed recently about it, because when I watched it, I was doing like a bit of Googling, and he does not like the comparison.
Well, of course,
Clarkson's
it's very, very similar. And it has like, a sidekick, Bert or something. He has similar people helping him to do what he's doing. The other final thing I'll say about the masterstroke is in terms of the documentary makers, Rob Brydon does the voiceover.
What?
Yes. Didn't you hear? I didn't realize. Yeah, it's Rob Brydon. Yeah.
Oh,
so it's got this not like out and out piss take, because that would be unsubtle. But he does this little Brydonisms, like little words down and there, just he's going, you can just kind of watch it, you can hear him watching it, this play out, him reading the script going, oh, I see. Noel's doing that now. It just adds to the whole, adds an arched eyebrow, I would say, to the whole experience of watching it. So yes, Noel Edmonds, Kiwi Adventure, Friday, ITV1 for 3 weeks. And I'm sure it's all on the ITVX as well.
Sold.
Yeah. There you go.
I've been watching Star Trek this week. You'll be shocked to hear.
Of course you bloody have.
No. In a professional capacity, I was given the first 5 episodes of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which comes out in July, for an interview that I did with Paul Wesley, a.k.a. Captain Kirk, on Monday. So, I've been burning through Star Trek.
The interview has happened, or you're doing
it? It's done. Okay. It's in the bag.
Did it go well?
Aye, aye, Captain.
I mean, for me, yes. His experience might have been very different, but he was lovely.
I actually enjoyed it.
We talked about the captain's chair.
It must be nice for someone to be interviewed by a super fan.
A super fan. Nice or frightening?
A bit of both. I mean, there is straining orders very much in place. But
it's a bit like, at the end of like the Bourne films, where he's talking and he says, you should get some sleep, you look tired. And just looks around because he can see her. And that's it. I was obviously outside his window and he didn't know.
Creepy.
Yeah. Enjoyed getting my Star Trek on. Obviously, I can't review it because it's embargoed. But as I have said before, and the phrase that I coined, the tonal elasticity of that show
That's good.
Remains its strongest suit. I think it's incredible what that show is capable of.
Like
zigzagging from horror to trauma to PTSD to musicals to slapstick comedy to rom-com territory. It's
a tonal roller coaster.
It really is. There's an incredible amount of flex within that, much more so than in any other Star Trek. It's wonderful.
I like that expression. I'm going to add it to our list.
Great. Yeah. Tonal elasticity. Okay, fine. That is what we have been watching this week. So we move on now to the postbag. Kay, do you have access to the postbag now? Or are we... Is it still in my court?
Well, no, it's not in your... It is in your court. Whether I get access to it or not very much depends on Boyd.
Right.
Because Boyd is in charge of facilitating...
Am I, though?
Yeah.
I thought we'd established I'm not your...
You're not the boss of her.
I'm not the boss of
you. I mean, you never have been, even when you were, but I think in this instance, you need to take charge.
Yeah.
People listen to Boyd Hilton in this building. You need to get me back into the postbag, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
His head is in his hands. Yeah.
This is clearly stressing Boyd.
Why is everything so difficult?
I know. Tell me about it.
But you're implying that despite this, you still have a question for this week.
No, I'm saying it's you.
You literally don't have a question for this week at all.
Well, I can't get into it, so unless it's my telepathy.
So I just assume that you've got one from another means, like just solicited a member of the public, got it off social media, or done one of those things.
No, but I can ask a question.
You really have put in no effort at all. Okay, that's good to know.
Unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable.
So what you're saying is we literally don't have a listener question.
No, Shantini, what I'm literally saying to you is you just need to open the inbox and read with your eyes.
I don't know
if that's within the capabilities, but we can just hope and pray for you in this moment. Just do what you did yesterday on Pilot Plus and open the inbox and read some stuff out. I don't understand how hard that is.
Okay, with the caveat that there's been no preparation or even triaging, really, of any kind here, I am literally going to pick the top message.
Wow.
Because that is the amount of effort I'm prepared to put
into
this.
On the edge.
I've got the top message, and the top message, the most recent thing, it comes from Ben. This is Ben's message. Thank you, Ben. And Ben says, "Hello, James Kay and TV's Boyd Hilton. There are, of course, certain shows that everyone ends up talking about and become quick breakout hits, but there are also shows that I watch and love, but nobody else was watching it. So what are the shows you love that seem to fly under the radar, that don't get mentioned on the podcast, and that nobody else seems to watch? Mine is definitely Acapulco, a lovely bilingual 80s set comedy drama on Apple TV+.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know what Acapulco is.
It's
we haven't reviewed it, have we?
I think we might have reviewed the first one.
Do you know, we absolutely might have done.
There's a couple of shows on Apple TV Plus that kind of, we watched the first couple of episodes or reviewed, and then they kind of fall by the wayside.
The amount of shows, when people say, have you seen this? I went, no, I've never seen it. And then someone will say, you literally reviewed it. What are you talking about? And
they just
go out of my head. So we may well, in fact, I might have watched the whole thing. Who knows? I don't remember
possible.
It. But the point
is
who's in it?
Who's in it? I tell you who's in it. Enrique Arizon, Camila Perez, Jessica Collins, Fernando Casa, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. Well, I don't remember
that. It was in 2021, so before my time, so I've got an excuse.
Yeah, get out of jail for a card. You could really say anything on Apple TV Plus, really, couldn't you? With the exception of Slow Horses, most of the shows on Apple TV Plus no one's ever heard of.
It's a slight exaggeration, but I know what you mean.
There's an element of truth to it, though. Yeah, so if I were to say, like, Dark Matter, Constellation, things like these are all great shows.
Shrinking people missed out on.
The average person would be like, what? What's that?
Yes.
Because Apple TV Plus has so much phenomenal stuff, but most people don't subscribe to it.
Servant
is another one.
Servant, I do think.
Anything beginning with S, really.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that. Is it good?
It's very good.
I love it. It's quite horrible.
I'm out.
Yeah, it's very intense.
Bad Monkey, I enjoyed on Apple.
Bad Monkey, another good
Bad
shout.
Monkey. Yeah. Yeah.
Do you know what? I'm bringing up the Apple TV list.
We are not sponsored by Apple TV.
We are not sponsored. We'd like to be. That would be nice. But yes, I'm going to bring up this because actually there's tons of stuff on here which I would say would count. Let's have a look on here. Yes. I mean, Bad Sisters, people have talked about before the Billy Crystal show. Before, most people haven't heard of that
as well. That, didn't we?
Yep, that was great. Really enjoyed that. I mean, Blackbird, which is germane to something we'll be talking about a bit later on. Most people, I would argue, probably don't know about that. The Buccaneers, which Christina Hendricks is going to be talking about later on, is another one. The Changeling. Remember The Changeling with Lakeith Stanfield?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Again,
that really was
another
that
one.
That was very.
Most people wouldn't know what it was. Yeah. Criminal Record.
Yeah.
With Cush Jumbo.
Oh, that was brilliant.
Really good.
Yeah.
Most people haven't heard of it.
I think they're doing a second series of that.
Are they?
Yeah, I believe they are. Yeah, that's right. Dark Matter, obviously, we mentioned The Crowded Room with Tom Holland, which is a good one.
Controversial
Your
Crowded
Friends
Room,
and Neighbours, we
which
reviewed.
Spoiled itself.
Right? Another good one. Do you remember Echo 3? With Ruddy Bloody Luke Evans.
Yeah, when they go into the jungle.
That's the
one.
Yeah. I watched all of that. Yeah. Oh, it was great. Yeah. But again, no one's heard of it.
The Studio.
The studio has cut through. Yeah, like that.
Do you think?
I think the studio's one of these things where not a lot of people, I think, have actually physically seen it, but I think people are aware of what it is. Yeah, I think it's so. Cut through the popular culture.
There's a few. Apple's definitely got like a handful of shows.
Extrapolations, where you remember where Kit Harington is watching TV on a swimming pool and the bit with the walrus. It's terrible.
That was terrible.
That made Boyd so angry.
He went mental.
Sorry. Did go mental. Actually, that's. I probably should say that. He got very angry.
Did he? Yes.
Yeah.
But I mean, For All Mankind, I think, has cut through to an extent. I think people are, even if they haven't seen it, they are aware of For All Mankind, which is good. Foundation.
Ted Lasso. I think there's
criminally
a handful. Ted Lasso, For All Mankind, obviously Slow Horses. And
maybe Ted Lasso the most, I would say.
Oh, God, completely, yeah. Although I think the most viewed is Slow Horses, I was reading recently. Slow Horses is so good that people sign up to Apple TV to watch it.
Well, Slow Horses is one of the best shows on television, so that's, you know, that's fair
There's
enough.
A couple of others maybe that I'm thinking about. Surface, it may be-ish.
Things like, you know,
Severance. Sorry, bang the mic. Severance is the one that is their highest rated show, I think, now for
but
Apple TV.
Is it their most watched, though? I wouldn't have thought that.
I think it has eventually become the most watched. Okay. I'm pretty sure.
But you're right. Severance is the one that everyone has heard of.
That's a cultural artifact that almost whether you've seen it or not, everyone's aware of it and everyone's aware
cultural
of it.
Cultural artifact?
Yeah, isn't that? I would say that's like already shot into the top 20 or whatever of most highly acclaimed TV scripted shows of the last decade or whatever.
Suspicion came to ITV like about three weeks ago,
weird.
Didn't it?
That's showing on Saturday night now. Showing on Saturday night as we speak. That's a weird, like, whichever company produced that show. Yeah.
Because with Uma Thurman, that was a show that it actually started quite well. I think it runs out of steam, unfortunately, that one does. But spoiler to anyone who's watching that at the moment, sorry.
Yeah.
Sugar, you know, with the mad twist with Colin Farrell.
Outside of the Apple. We'll just turn this to Apple TV.
It's just a list of Apple shows now.
When I was watching 28 Years Later last night, I did sit there thinking, do you know what? Devs.
Yes.
Alex Garland's TV dropped a show. Was absolute. I loved that show.
I know you did.
That's almost just about up there with the OA for me. People listen to regulars all know. Yeah. I think it's a fucking masterpiece, that series. And
it's very, very good.
And no one's heard of it. I mention it all the time to people in the industry. Yeah. I'm like, and of course he did Devs. And they took all the films.
Alex Garland, the beach guy.
Yeah, the beach guy who wrote the 28 Days Later originally and wrote 28 Years Later that's happening now and has since become a internationally reclaimed film director and everything.
Yeah, like Civil War, Warfare,
massively acclaimed director.
He's adapting Elden Ring at the moment.
Devs, which was on BBC Two in the UK a couple of years ago, was phenomenal. And people are like, what the fuck is that? And I think it's still on iPlayer.
Well, also, it came out around the same time as I think it was season 3 of Westworld, and I think covered similar ground,
so
but much better.
Much better. Yeah. So much better.
It was very, very good.
I love that. In fact, now I've inspired myself to maybe do a rewatch. I never do a rewatch.
But yes, but shows like that people don't talk about.
Yeah.
But you're right, Devs is 100% one where I think people talked about it a bit at the time, but nowadays, but not only do people not, like people literally, you'll say Devs, they'll look at you blankly.
Yeah.
Won't know what it is.
Exactly, yeah. By the way, did you notice that the opening scene of this film, of 28 Years Later is incredibly similar to the opening scene of the Fighty Soldiery film?
Alex
Garland.
Warfare.
You know, in Warfare, they're watching a video, a cheesy video.
Right.
All watching it together.
Not Teletubbies.
All the kids are sitting together watching Teletubbies. I thought it was very interesting. They use this very similar device in the two. You can have that for your review.
Oh, thank you, boy.
On Empire Podcast.
That's very useful.
What a gift.
There you go. The gift that keeps on giving.
Anything else? Any other show? I mean, there'll be loads of them, won't there? Shows that we champion that other people just don't talk about, think about, see. Most of them are sci-fi.
I think we've come up with a lot there. Yeah. I think we've answered the question.
They're pretty much all Apple shows, for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Apple is
it's a home of quality, Kay.
Yes,
a home of quality. All right, we've kind of answered a question there.
Yeah.
If you want to send your message to the postbag, which Kay may or may not be able to access, then it's pilottv@empiremagazine.com. Shall we have this week's guest? I think we should. The Buccaneers return to Apple. Yes, we're on Apple again. With its all its Gilded Age shenanigans that started, I want to say, a couple of weeks ago, because Christina Hendricks is back in her role as matriarch Patty St. George, and Jordan jumped on the Zoom with her just last week. So here is Christina Hendricks.
It is my absolute pleasure to welcome to the Pilot TV podcast one of the stars of Apple TV Plus's The Buccaneers, Christina Hendricks. How are you today?
I'm very well. How are you?
I am very well, and I have also just watched you talking about scones on This Morning, and can confirm as someone that is from down south that in Cornwall it's jam first and then cream, because the jam is supposed to stop the cream from melting, and then in Devon it's the opposite way around, because sandwiches start with dairy usually, so cream first makes sense.
Don't you want it to be a little melty? Isn't that nice?
Well, that's the secret, isn't it? Is that maybe the melting is the practical thing to do, but you know, stopping the melting is spoils
the fun. Is it supposed to say something about your personality if you choose one or the other?
You prefer the chaos, you go for the Devon way, and if you prefer law and order, then you go for the Cornwall way, maybe. But firstly, obviously, I want to congratulate you on the Buccaneers and on season 2. It's been amazing. I've watched 16 episodes of this show now in the last, I think, 9 days. And I feel very greedy because once I started, I just couldn't stop myself. And I've now interrupted family dinners by just explaining what's happening with the St. George's.
Well, we love to hear that. That's a good response.
But before I get into talking about the Buccaneers, if you don't mind, I wanted to ask you a question about another period drama that isn't Mad Men, but I do promise that there is a Buccaneers segue that will get us back on track after.
I know where you're headed.
Do you know where? Oh, okay. Well, we'll see now. So I read while prepping for this that your now iconic red hair comes from a childhood love of one Anne of Green Gables. Firstly, is this true? Secondly, what is it about Anne Shirley that resonated with a young Christina Hendricks?
Well, I was wrong. I didn't know where you were going, but you are correct, actually. I was very much in love with the series when I was younger, the one that starred Megan Fellows.
Yes.
And I read all the books, and there was this very sort of romantic, poetic, wide-eyed curiosity about her that I think I related to and still do, a bit of a romantic inside of me. And I don't know, I felt very, very like a kindred spirit, as she would say.
A bosom friend.
a bosom friend. So, I still, there was the newer series, Anne with an E, and I absolutely loved that as well. In fact, I just designed some dresses for a clothing line, and in my clothing tag, it's Joni is the company. I use a quote from Anne of Green Gables inside. And so here I am as an adult all these years later, still referencing it.
Amazing, amazing. Well, as a big fan of L.M. Montgomery's books and also the Megan Fellows show, TV films as well, I'm really happy to hear that that is in fact true. But I did promise that I would segue back into the Buccaneers after that. And I do think that there is a sort of shared spirit between Anne as a story and also with the Buccaneers, albeit slightly less family friendly with the Buccaneers perhaps. But you know, these are stories both set in the late 1800s, both take you into these sort of vivid immersive landscapes, and they're both ultimately, it feels like to me anyway watching them, that they're celebrations of independent women who know their own minds in times where patriarchal society was the norm, and it's a real celebration of that. I wondered whether for you, when you got involved with the Buccaneers, Anne was possibly either consciously or subconsciously on your mind at all, or if there was something else specifically in Catherine Jakeway's vision for the show that really resonated with you.
I think I am drawn to obviously literature and film that takes place in that era. I'm drawn to the fashion. I mean, the Victorians really changed everything, you know, as science and architecture and art and, you know, just thriving in so many ways. I think it's such an exciting time. And, you know, the Buccaneers is so fabulous because, it's based on there used to be Americans that would go over to England to find wealthy men with titles. And this was sort of popular at the time, which I think a lot of people may not know. But it's very fun to show our sort of modern take with these smart, raucous, confident women who go over. And then we of course, you know, do the America versus England, you know, oh, these wild Americans come over and upset our, you know, our system. And it's always playful. I think people always enjoy, you know, the sort of England versus the US kind of storyline. You know, they're gorgeous and it's sexy. And, you know, they go over there and they disrupt some stuff. They mix it up.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, the thing that made me know that I was going to get into this straight away was the North American Scum as the soundtrack for the show is just like, it's such a banger. You don't skip the credits, which is always a sign of a great show. But also, like, there is this like sort of punk rock sort of anarchic energy to the series, whether it is that anachronistic soundtrack or the kind of fearless embrace of sexuality that the show's got. You know, there's so much energy and verve to everything that's happening. Which means then that I don't say it lightly when I say that season two is, if you'll pardon my French, like, it's absolutely fucking off the chain in terms of the energy of season two. Did you feel that when you got the script for the series?
I couldn't believe it. I was like, wait, what happened? I'm showing up. Well, you know, I come in episode one and then there's a little bit of break and I come in near the end again. And so much happens in such a short amount of time that even I was like gasping for air. I was like, wait a minute, I've got to catch my breath. Like this person's gone and this happened and these people are together and these people are not together. And you just, it's, you know, it's very juicy this year. And yeah, there's no time to, I'm not even sure what I'm saying. I just think it's just so, I think a lot of times for a period piece, people think it's sort of maybe a slower pace or it's a calmer thing. And that is not the case here.
Nope, not at all. I feel like I should have had a notebook out just to be like, okay, where's Nan up to now? Where are the triangles intersecting here? But I mean, no, the in terms of your character then, Patty St. George, obviously season one was such an incredible journey that character went on. You sort of, you're there right at the very beginning, you resurface in the middle of the series, and then at the end of the series, that final episode, by the end of it, I mean, you've just announced to your husband that you want to divorce. You've got one daughter who's just got married, another daughter who's having a baby that's just gone missing, and now the biological daughter, the biological mother of the daughter who's just got married, has come back into the fray. And I was wondering, for you as an actor, your feelings about Patty, they must have evolved over the course of making that first series. And I wondered how that informs your approach then when you come back for series two, because there is such an added emotional layer of depth to Patty when we meet her at the beginning of series two.
Yeah, I think originally, you know, Mrs. St. George is written in a way where she's, I mean, the word I sort of thought of originally was sort of silly and maybe, you know, very, not maybe, but very caught up in what society thinks.
A bit of a Mrs. Bennet kind of.
Yes, vibe, definitely. Yeah. Sort of like, you know, we must get these daughters and, you know, into etiquette school and get them married off and they'll be, you know, they need the social status and all those sorts of things. But she learns so much from watching her daughters that very quickly we find out that, yes, we did achieve all those things. We did get them married. But now it's all crumbling to the ground and it's a big old mess. And the fact that Patty's able to watch and learn from them and grow so much herself in that amount of time, gave her much more depth. And that really, you know, the way I wanted to play it is she did all of those things to secure the safety and the protection for her daughters. It was about loving them so much that's what she was told was the right thing to do. And she was going to do everything she could to make sure that they were safe. And then all the things that she put into place to keep them safe made them exactly the opposite. And so, you know, she's had to really open her eyes and it made it have to look at her own relationship and look in the mirror for the first time. You know, she did so much of concentrating on her daughters her whole life and putting all her energy that way, that she was able to compartmentalize the lies she had to keep and sort of keep this nice tidy bow on her life that now is, you know, not her life anymore. And her daughters have left the home. And now she's just stuck with this man who's treated her poorly her entire life. And she has to do something about it.
Yeah, I think something really interesting that you touch on there is you mentioned the word love a few times, and that being sort of one of the core characteristics of Patty. And I feel like that maybe if there was a word to define her, then instead of silly or any of those other words you might have initially thought when you were first reading the scripts, I think love is it. And I think at the start of season two, obviously you're getting to work with the brilliant Leighton Meester, Gossip Girl herself.
Yeah.
And she comes in as Nell, as Patty's sister. And the dynamic between both of you and that sort of sisterly bond and the way that it's tugged and pulled at and the frayed knots are sort of undone is so beautiful to watch. And I just wondered what was it like for you getting to, A, share the screen with Leighton and be a scene partner with her, but also going to some really properly emotional, you know, sort of dirt beneath the nails, emotionally raw places with her as well.
Well, the nice thing is our very first scene together was one of those intimate emotional scenes in her chambers when Patty comes in. So we got to do that scene together first, right, which I thought was really nice because it sort of established the warmth and the love that was there before the split up. So we got to sort of create a little history and love there before we did these scenes that are very combative. And it's a complicated relationship, and Leighton's so wonderful. So we immediately, I think, had a really nice chemistry, and we really sat and discussed, you know, I think that when Patty walks into the room in that moment, she's still trying to get rid of her. I think she is still trying to get rid of Nell, but her previous approach didn't work. So she's like, maybe if I go in with tenderness, and maybe if I go in and ask politely to leave, maybe she'll do that. And through the course of that scene, she starts to really listen to Nell for the first time and really hear the facts of what she was experiencing. I think Patty has turned it into an attack and a betrayal her entire life in order to just survive. And she starts to hear the facts and how hurt. And really, Patty was really sort of a mother to Nell as well. So it's more than sisters, and that nurturing aspect of Patty is tugged at in her heart. And she just, it brings her back to sort of reality. And she has to really think about really what happened to Nell and what happened with her husband.
Yeah, I mean, it's a fascinating dynamic, and I think it's a testament to the quality of the writing on the show, as well as to both of your performances, is that you see in that first conversation, that first proper conversation that you have, you see Patty as a mother who sees her daughter Nell as still a child in a lot of ways. You know, she's still so young. And then there's that, I didn't realize I teared up until I felt the tears on my cheeks, but Leighton, as Nell comes back and is like, she's only a year older than I was when your husband first brought me to his bed. And the thing that really struck me about that, as well as just the beautiful, like, succinctness of that, and the way that you react to that as well, like, if there's an award for cry acting, the tear that, like, hangs in the corner of your eye in that moment was beautiful. But the thing that really struck me is that something that comes up again and again throughout the show is the way that women are pitted against each other. This is like a historic trend, and it comes back again and again, something I've become even more aware of now that I'm a father to two daughters. But, you know, women are constantly being sort of forced to tear each other apart because of the things that men do often in society. And I wondered whether, like, you think that there is a link perhaps between our obsession and fascination with period dramas and that kind of going, oh, this patriarchal society with all their rituals, and thinking there's a distance from that, but also how close that allows you to get to the actual heart of these problems that still persist in society now, if that makes any sense. I'm sorry, it's very convoluted.
It makes perfect sense. And I am very grateful for your insightful and thoughtful questions. You know, it's one thing that I loved about doing Mad Men for so long, and it's one thing I love about the Buccaneers, is to use the past as a mirror, to use it as a tool to show how far we've come, or have we? And the fights that women had to have and still have to get to where we are. You know, we're going to really dive into Patty's divorce in this season, and we do a sort of modern version of I think Patty's experience would be very, very different if we were really in the 1870s. Mm-hmm. But important to use the tool of the past to show that it is different. And that's, you know, I think that's the wonderful thing about watching something like this is I think, first off, you're going to be blown away by the costumes and the sets and all these things. And then hopefully it'll make you, you know, ask questions about where we are and what we've had to go through. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff I like is when it starts a really, you know, interesting conversation between people.
Yeah, definitely. And I mean, like you say, that you get to work in these incredible locations. I mean, you spent a lot of time up in Scotland for this, which I know you've taken the country to your heart. As someone that lives in Wales, I have a very similar feeling about Wales. But and you've got all of these incredible costumes and, like I say before about the soundtrack and everything like that. Something else that really sort of struck me, because it's not often that you get to do interviews like this with someone whose career has been so long and storied and in so many different facets, is that you've had chances to tell stories and explore characters in various ways now over the course of your career. So whether that's training as a ballet dancer when you were younger, whether that's doing modeling work before film and television, theatre, you know, all of these different strands, voice acting too. I'm a big fan of Solar Opposites. And when I saw that you were in the credits for that, I was like, oh, wow, it's Christina Hendry from Mad Men in Solar Opposites. And I was just wondering, like, you've explored creating characters through these different facets over the course of your career. When it came to finding Patty St. George then, did you find a specific, like, angle in with her? Was it the voice, or was it something about her physicality? Was it as simple as there being something on the page when you were reading it that made you go, okay, I know who she is now, I know how to play her? What was it that gave you that, like, key in to how she is portrayed?
I think what you said before, it was love. You know, one thing that I've learned from doing television is you can't make too many decisions that could possibly change when you receive the next script. So you've got to give yourself a certain amount of backstory that you can work with, but you can't commit too hard to something that you've made up for yourself, because you're writers might have a very, very different idea. So then it would be contrary to sort of what you've established. So you take all the clues that you can in the scripts that you have, and then you get the next script and you take all those clues and you add them to the clues that you got before. And in the first episode of season one, there's the beautiful moment where the debutantes are walking down the stairs to the Taylor Swift song, and it's so exquisite and it's so perfect. And we shot this scene and Patty's watching, and I decided to just make it the most important moment of my entire life. And I remember our director, Susanna, came up laughing, and she was like, you, like, tears in your eyes and like heart pounding. And I was like, but this is the moment she's been, like, her whole life has been for this moment, bringing the girls to this place and putting them on display. And it seems like such a frivolous thing, girls in pretty dresses walking down the staircase to find their man. But this is everything to her. And I think that it's funny to think of the stakes being so different. Like, to me, just like to go to a party to meet a guy is not that big of a deal. But in this moment, in this world, in our story, it is absolutely everything. And so I just really wanted to, like, fully commit to these kind of what I would say silly sort of ideas, but they're not silly at all to her. And so I just wanted the stakes to always be very, very high for her. And you know, it's her entire world.
I think, yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you. And I do think that that's part of the sort of secret to the show and its enjoyability, is that it is, I think it would be fair to say, quite absurd in terms of the sheer amount of drama. It is very, you know, that word juicy, like it's very scandalous. But at the same time, there is very human emotion anchoring it. There is a very clear sense of its gender politics and its awareness of the context in which it's being made now. one thing I wanted to ask just before I let you go, because I've had so much of your time already, but if you could imagine a scenario where Joan from Mad Men got to meet Patty St. George from the Buccaneers, what do you think they would make of each other as women? Because they are both so strong and they live in such different times, but also, again, such similar times. What do you think they would, how would they size each other up?
That's an interesting question. Because I think Joan may have been slightly judgmental of Patty in season one, but I think would befriend her in season two. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's a very good diplomatic answer as well. It's a good teasing answer. Well, thank you so, so much for your time. It's been lovely getting to talk to you about the Buccaneers. And it's a brilliant season, like I've already said. So, yeah, best of luck with the release. And hopefully I'll get to talk to you again sometime.
Thank you for your wonderful questions. I appreciate it.
That was Christina Hendricks. Let's talk this week's news. What have we got news, Boydie?
Well, the most exciting news for me of the week was the aforementioned Steve Coogan is back with the also aforementioned Rob Brydon, and they're doing a new series of The Trip. And this time it's called The Trip to the Northern Lights. And it will be them going across Northern Europe and Scandinavia, various different countries, in search of fine food, a wry conversation, and a glimpse of the elusive Northern Lights. As ever, it's directed and produced by Michael Winterbottom. It'll be in six parts.
Did you just laugh at Winterbottom? Did you literally just laugh at the name Winterbottom?
It's the way that Boyd said
sweet.
It.
Okay, Michael Winterbottom.
Sorry, I snickered. Sorry.
That is extraordinary.
That was brilliant. But The Trip all round, all the series of The Trip are among my favourite things ever. I cannot get enough of them. So I'm incredibly excited about this. And hopefully Empire will pay for me to do a set visit.
Yeah. James has sanctioned it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. That means yes.
Yeah, that means sure. We'll get you on a motorbike.
Yeah, so they're going to be starting filming that soon.
Can you imagine Boyd on a motorbike?
No.
I would love that. I'd be in the sidecar. We should have
Yeah, I mean, give it a go.
Come on, it's fun.
Yeah.
James can somehow hold on to the back on a skateboard or something. We'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think not.
Okay.
Okay, good piece of news. What other news have we got? Oh, okay, apparently, so The Pitt Season 2 got a first set photo, which, of course, is very exciting for those who have seen The Pitt, which is apparently one of the shows
Please
of the year. Of course,
The Pitt.
Of course, we wouldn't know that
because
no one's picked up the rights over here, apparently. So,
I'm preempting any postbag mail. Please don't email about it because we do know that it's brilliant. We want to watch it. We just cannot.
We've literally had people saying, you know, why haven't you covered The Pit? It literally hasn't been on.
No, every week I get someone asking me that.
Yeah, it's quite upsetting. It is The Pit. I really want to see it. And yet I can't.
Yeah. Me too.
It must be coming somewhere soon.
You would hope.
Can you find out?
Yeah, Boydie.
Like your to-do list, IT, sort it out for the postbag and then find out when The Pit is and also get my dream guests on the live show. Thank you.
This imaginary list of imaginary guests, yes.
Yeah, I know I'm going to come up with a list, don't you?
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, yes. you've been robbed of being able to look at the internet, haven't you, for some reason, Kay, this week? So,
builders in, Wi-Fi down.
Builders, you've got the builders in, as they say. you've missed, this is very you, this news,
go
I
on.
Think. So I'm aiming at you. The cast of The Other Bennett Sister has been announced, which is a BBC dramatisation of the novel by Janice Hadlow, who used to work for the BBC, by the way.
Oh, wow.
I think she was head of BBC Two.
A publicist or a...
No, she was literally the controller of BBC Two, the Supremo. The 10-part series explores and expands the world of Pride and Prejudice. I'll say that again. Pride and Prejudice. Pride and Prejudice through the often overlooked perspective of Mary Bennett. And how about this for a cast? Ruth Jones...
Oh, brilliant.
Of Gavin Stacey. Richard E. Grant of Everything. Indira Varma of Everything. And Richard Coyle of Everything.
I'm so excited.
Yeah, it's a really good cast. And Jones will play Mr. and Mrs. Bennett. Varma and Coyle will play Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner. Mary's worldly aunt and uncle take her under her wing. And I'm excited about it.
You know, I love Austin and Pride. What did you call it? Pride.
Pride and Prejudice.
Pride and Prejudice is my favourite.
Yeah. Have you watched the BBC Two recent, current in fact, maybe even, history of Jane Austen?
It's brilliant, isn't it? It is so good. Yeah. It's like a love letter to Jane Austen, and it's got so many great insights from experts.
Yeah, I should have mentioned that in what we've been watching, actually, because I have watched that, and it's really, really good.
It's available on iPlayer. I recommend anyone who loves Austen to check it out.
Yeah.
Alan Richson, a.k.a. Jack Reacher.
Yeah.
You're obsessed.
I am obsessed. But he posted something on social media just after we recorded last week. He posted a picture of him holding up Gone Tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Which is going to be the fourth season of Reacher. That's the 13th Lee Child book. It's going to be the fourth season of Reacher. And this is the one that came out in the late noughties, it was 2009. And it's the one where it begins with Reacher on a subway train. Yes. And it touches on kind of suicide bombers and Islamist terrorists. And
I've read this one. This is one of the ones I've read. Like quite a handful of or more of and I really like that one. Yeah, I think it's a good.
So it was an unlucky
choice.
13. It was
no, it was a good 13. Yeah. But that's going to be the fourth season. I'm the first to admit I had my issues.
We all know you had your
with
issues.
The third season
You've
of Reacher.
Them.
But that doesn't mean I don't love that show for all its flaws.
Yeah. Okay. Fine. We'll see how it goes.
Yes. So excited about that. The other thing that we should say, you know, while I'm talking Star Trek Strange New Worlds, we found out that show is going to be ending with its fifth season. So the third season is the one that comes out very, very soon. Okay, gutted.
Give me a second. I'm just trying to squeeze out a tear.
Right. So we're going to get the third season. They're making the fourth season at the moment. There's going to be one more after that. So it'll be a 5-season run.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I am sad for you, but...
Thank you, Kay.
Hopefully it's a good one. Hopefully it goes out with a bang.
Let's hope. Mm-hmm. Let's hope. I'm still hoping, genuinely, and obviously Paul Wesley was not going to talk about that, I'm really hoping that they, as has been rumoured, they segue from Strange New Worlds into a reboot of the original series with Paul Wesley as Kirk. And it's
would
a complete original series reboot.
You blow my mind.
And it's that's it. That would be amazing.
Mm.
Who knows?
Exciting Trek.
Kay's very excited.
Exciting Trek news.
Anything non-Trek related?
There's big industry news this week, which we should touch on because we are, I believe, a comprehensive and highly valued and admired podcast dealing with television.
We're a comedy podcast by all accounts.
Easy. So the BBC have announced their new chief content officer this week, Charlotte Moore, who's been in charge of all BBC content, basically, for years and years and years now, and did a brilliant job, I think.
We like Charlotte Moore.
We do like Charlotte Moore. Charlotte Moore's leaving to join Left Bank, the producers of The Crown, and Department Q, in fact. But the new taking her place is Kate Phillips, who is currently BBC's director of Unscripted. She's the one. She's in charge of Strictly, The Traitors.
Yeah.
Massive hits. And actually, she's also really, really nice. And I know her quite well. I've known her for years. And so Kate Phillips.
Big fan of the podcast, is she?
Do you know what? I actually think she does listen to the podcast. I definitely saw her fairly. We went to a play a few months ago at the National, darling.
So
it sounded like a theatrical twat there. I bumped into her at the National.
Wow.
And I think she did say she listened to the podcast. Yeah. We'll soon find out. She may be a bit busier now because she's basically in charge of everything at the BBC.
It's a big job.
It's a huge job, yeah. But no, she's a really good person, so I'm excited about that. Congratulations to her if you're listening, Kate. There you go. Industry news
indeed. There was also a teaser for the new series of The Diplomat.
I missed it too.
I missed it.
Yeah, it has been out there, but I've not seen it.
That's exciting.
But I'm very excited about the return of The Diplomat. Even though, you know, Kay still hasn't got over the ending of the second season.
Last scene.
Isn't happy about it.
I really liked it.
What was your issue? You were unconvinced by the way the Secret Service were
running.
In a funny way.
It was ridiculous how they ran towards,
literally what would happen, but anyway.
Yeah. I think not.
Has there been any other news? It seems a relatively light news.
It's quite light. There's a good funny story about what Ron Howard improvising that episode of The Studio where he goes bonkers.
I love that episode.
Yeah, it's brilliant. Yeah. Apparently really when funny. He throws the hat, he improvised that. That was the story in Variety because they're interviewing, as I said last week, it's award season. All these people are doing big interviews about their shows.
Yeah.
Hoping they'll get nominated for Emmys.
Did you see, I don't think it was a new interview. It's one of these things where it turned up on my Instagram feed. So it could literally have been ages ago, or it might have been a recent one. It was Pedro Pascal on one of the American late night talk shows. I literally can't even remember which one. But he was talking about how he got cast as Oberon Martell in Game of Thrones, which was his, pretty much his breakout role, right? And he was saying that he was acting as mentor to a young actor. And as part of that, he was helping this young actor read some lines for a part that he was going for. And the part was for the Red Viper, Oberyn Martell.
Oh, wow.
From the, you know, the Mountain, the Viper and the Mountain Viper, whichever one it was. And apparently he was reading the lines and with the guy, and he was like, this is a good role. I learned this role. Apparently then quickly just went, oh yeah, I'm just going outside. Went, called his agent, was like, this is a really good role. Like, I really want to go off for this role myself. And then he cheated a little bit.
Ooh,
he cheated a little bit. So he is...
Well, I can forgive him that.
Yeah, he is good friends with Sarah Paulson. They've known each other since they were teenagers. She is, of course, good friends with Amanda Peet, who she did Studio 60 with. And Amanda Peet is married to David Benioff, who was one of the showrunners of Game of Thrones. Okay.
Wow.
So he made a call.
I need a web diagram.
Yeah, he made a call and, shall we say, very much got the part. And that was it. The rest is history, as it were. He was then the Red Viper. Whether or not he still talks to the young anti mentors, I don't know.
I
thought that was a really interesting story. Like, he was really upfront about it on this show. He was saying,
sometimes
you
just got to do what you got to do.
He just lends into it. He just owned it. Yeah.
And now he's in every single film on television.
And now he is in everything.
And no complaints.
No complaints. You're right, Petra.
Brilliant, yeah.
All right. Is that news?
I think
that's
so.
News.
Yeah.
Let's wrap up news. Let's move on to this week's reviews. And we begin this week with Transaction on ITVX. This is created by and starring Jordan Gray as Liv, a trans woman with a, shall we say, somewhat abrasive personality, who is offered a job at Nick Frost's supermarket in order to deal with an anti-trans image problem that, frankly, he's unwittingly fostered. Boydie, tell us a little bit about this supermarket comedy. It's a good joke. It's a good joke.
Yeah. Boydie doesn't know, because he goes to Fortnum.
Yeah, Boydie's like, little, that's not how you pronounce Waitrose.
Oh, my God.
I have a cardo, darling.
Unfair. Unbelievable.
Would it be more unbelievable if we hadn't talked about the National for a second? I'm gently yanking your chest.
Yes,
sorry. I'm teasing.
You yank away. Yeah. We'll see what happens.
Couldn't pick an Aldi out of a lineup, could you?
Wow, you're really milking this. You really made yourself laugh.
It really
You're in hysterics.
I mean, you know.
Yeah,
we're going to tell you. It's amusing.
Okay, anyway, this show is set, listeners, in a supermarket. That's why the hilarity about where I shop is... I haven't told you my Tesco story, actually, about when the guy thought I was stealing from there. There was
what?
What
did he think you were stealing?
He thought I was stealing... Right, here's the thing. There's a big Tesco in London Bridge, where I live, and then there's a smaller Tesco literally about a minute from where I live. And sometimes I get stuff from the big Tesco, but they've got different stuff, right? So the big Tesco stuff the little Tesco doesn't have and vice versa. Anyway, I got stuff from the Tesco. Went to the little Tesco to get a couple of things.
That is a bit of schoolboy error.
So then the guy's like, are you paying for that? The security guy. And I'm like,
did you have a receipt?
I said, I don't know. Who gets a receipt these days? You don't get receipts.
Yeah, but also,
who walks
into another branch of a shop? They just
apparently
bought
something
without
a receipt. It's illegal. Anyway, the guy's like, no, this is in the other shop at London Bridge. I got it. You haven't got a receipt. I was like, no, who gets a receipt these days? But you know what was brilliant was I had the last laugh. I won out because I realised they don't sell these things in this one. So I said,
Did you go to the aisle and have a look?
No, I knew they didn't. I've been there, going to this Tesco for like 15 years. And I was like, you don't sell these things. And he's like, yes, we do. He rung it up, just proved to me. I was like, you just scanned the barcode. That doesn't mean you got it. And anyway, this lovely guy who was like working there went, I said, can you check? You don't sell these, do you? And he went to check and he said, no, we don't. And I was vanquished.
Did the guy apologise?
Yeah, kind of reluctantly.
Surely they should have just checked the CCTV.
Well,
to see you walking in with the bag.
For whatever the item was. What was it? Can I ask?
How have we got this far into this story? I don't know.
Go on.
I can't remember. It was like a nice, you know, a nice...
Was it caviar? Like, was it some caviar. Crystal?
Moet.
Anyway, sorry.
Anyway, that was your transaction story.
Yeah. I shop at...
This is Boydie's way of saying he's a man of the people. He occasionally slums it in Tesco.
And he occasionally steals. Yeah. Carry on. No, I'm kidding.
Amateur shoplifter.
Oh, my God. Anyway.
This is
Jordan Gray's vehicle that she has... created. I think people might recognize her. She did Friday Night Live on Channel 4. You remember they revived that for one episode? I think maybe they'll make a series soon. And she appeared. She did a performance. And at the end of her performance, she got her penis out, basically, and was like playing the piano, her keyboard, just keyboard, just songs and stuff, with her dick, effectively.
Can you do that on TV?
Yes, you can. You can on Channel 4 after 10 o'clock on a
Good
Friday night. Yeah,
I wasn't aware of that.
Have you not seen The Piano on Channel 4?
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. Maybe she should have entered After The Piano, dark. So to speak. Yeah. But she is an accomplished stand-up.
Penis pianist, exactly.
And an accomplished stand-up et cetera, forging her own career. But this is her first sitcom. And it's what's interesting about it is that it's really addressing the trans issue full on. So it's not like, you know, there could be a show whereby, oh, just one of the characters, the main character, happens to be a trans woman. And, you know, it's not caught or bogged down in those issues. But this, almost every element of this show, you've got the idea there's a baying mob of anti-trans people, shall we say, or anti-turf in quotes, demonstrators who have been riled by the manager of the store, played by Nick Frost, who has accidentally created this kind of poster, this ad, which looks like he is making fun of trans people. And then you've got the main character being a trans woman talking about that throughout the whole show, and references to J.K. Rowling, I noticed, and other topical issues surrounding trans people. My favourite thing about it is Nick Frost. I think Nick Frost is often the best thing in things, but he's really funny in this and kind of also believable.
It's quite Brent-ish.
He is a bit Brentian. And as I often say about Ricky Gervais's performance as Tetford Brent, it's one of the most influential performances in TV history, because so many people subsequently have done a little bit of Brent. Mm. And I feel like this is Nick Frost doing what he does anyway, a bit, going back to Shaun of the Dead and beyond. So I don't think this feels, there's a little bit Brent to him, but not deliberately. But he's definitely got that quality to him, and he's funny. But I feel that, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was interesting. And so Jordan Gray's character does difficult, annoying things in the middle of the supermarket setting, deliberately designed to rile up people. And yet, I think she's quite likeable and entertaining to watch. But what I came away with thinking is, it's not quite funny enough. And I think the script needs to be punched up a bit. Like, it felt a bit like, and critics say this often, you know, a first draft, which is, I find, slightly irritating criticism. But it did feel like I feel like it needed more jokes and more comedy within what is basically a traditional sitcom format and workplace setting format. And yeah, I was slightly disappointed in how it wasn't funny enough for me.
See, I thought, I enjoyed this. Mm. Nick Frost absolutely is the standout. He's doing a really good job as Simon, the sort of well-meaning but out-of-touch boss. I thought the script was good. I thought it was funny. I think the the character work is great. Like the support cast, so you've got Francesca Mills as Millie, Kayla Michael as Beefy Linda. I thought they were great. And they're all their interactions, the interactions between the characters and the characters themselves, I think are really good. But what I found slightly jarring was the moments of Liv, Jordan Gray's character, when she's just monologuing, that's when it felt like it was trying too hard. And I found it less funny. Those were the moments I felt less funny. But I thought overall, I thought it was a decent sitcom, particularly as this is the debut sitcom of Jordan Gray. I love the Nick Frost character.
Yeah, same. Yeah.
So I had it. I think it's got potential. I think it was a decent start, but it is. I would warn. Yeah, James is looking at me. I would warn. It is silly in nature, some of it, and so it might not appeal to.
Well, you've seen it, presumably.
Yeah, no, I'm addressing him now.
Oh,
so I see. I'm teeing him up.
You're like warning him.
No, I'm listeners. I'm saying it is listeners. Okay. It is silly, and James, no doubt, will now take that baton and talk about that.
The thing that I hate in this streaming age is basic shit. Like, I cannot abide shows that are really basic in form and structure. Basically, they feel ripped from like another era, like a bygone era, like flimsy characters, rote plots, awful acting, just stuff that feels actively painful to watch. But enough about Countdown, because we haven't gotten to that show yet. We're still talking about transactions.
Oh,
so,
oh my god,
I quite enjoyed this.
Oh my god,
James, that is such a brilliant switch to room. I thought, oh my god, he's really
giving
it a kicking.
I thought it was actually quite good. But actually, the reason why I like it is Jordan Gray deliberately abrasive. That is the nature of the character. But the line delivery is fucking on point, and some of those gags are deliberately evasive, deliberately arch. But that she's really good at delivering the gag. So while this isn't, look, it's not my kind of show, 100%. Like, it is, it's a silly comedy, it's a broad sitcom, all these things. But I had a pretty good time with it because some of the lines, and they're quite close to the bone at times. Mm. Like, they're really, and I think that's why I liked it. It's quite provocative. There's a bit where she's like, we look like the setup to a joke that will get you uninvited to Christmas dinner. And I'm just like, this is genuinely quite funny. Like, she's really got a handle on, like, she deals with the trans issue. There's a J.K. Rowling joke, which made me laugh as well. Like, there's some really, like, quite interesting. The
There is no predicting.
Like, you know, the fact that they're like, you know, the hordes are at the gates banging on the door, all that stuff is just silly. But I think she has a lot of fun with that abrasive character. And I think she's able to use the lens of that character to make some really pointed gags, which land very much on this issue. And I had a good time with it. I thought it was actually pretty good.
Do you know what I also liked is that the glimpses of vulnerability in her character,
right.
I liked.
Yeah, because it's all front, isn't it? It's all front. Like, all of this abrasiveness is insecurity. And I think she's carefully modulating how that comes across, that you do see cracks in the armour. And yeah, Nick Frost is good value, obviously, as well.
I'm shocked.
It's not going to be on my Shows of the Year list, I'm not going to lie, but that's not my thing.
Carry on watching it?
No, I'm not, but that's because it's it's not my type of show. But that said, I had a pretty good time watching it.
Yeah, by the way, I enjoyed it. I sounded more critical than I intended, maybe, but I wanted there to be more of the good stuff that was in it.
Yeah, right. I think it probably needs honing a little bit.
Yeah, that's
but hopefully it will find its feet as it goes along.
I think
along.
I will watch more, you see.
Didn't you like Millie? I really like Millie and Biffy Linda.
Really
I really like those. It's really great characters.
Yeah, the supporting characters are really funny.
But you know, there's a gag in there where she literally says, yeah, I'm not going to touch that, and just moves on. And again, it's just funny because you see the joke formulating
and it's quite the delivery.
Yeah, it's quite like a, you know, it's quite a pointed joke, and it's just the fact that she just archly looks at it, kind of raises an eyebrow. And I'm it's funny.
Jordan Gray is a really accomplished comedian.
Yeah, she's very funny.
And she does bring that to the show for sure. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Transaction then. ITVX. When boy?
Well, ITV2, actually.
ITV2.
I mean, but everything on ITV2 is also on FTX.
Oh, then so I'm
you're
correct.
Not wrong, but it's live
I
on
need to
ITV.
Be more specific.
Do you know what? That's why I didn't. He said it in the intro, and I was about to correct him. I thought it will be on ITVX.
Yeah,
actually,
the same.
ITV2 and X.
Yes.
It's good, but if you watch TV linearly, and you're
watching who does?
Some people. ITV2, Tuesday, the 24th of June, 2025, at 10:05 p.m.
Okay. Mm. Next up, it's Countdown on Prime, which sees a Homeland Security officer murdered and a covert task force put together to try and root out the killers. You may have some inkling as to what I think of this. But let's see if Kay enjoyed Countdown or whether she spent the entire time hoping Richard Whiteley would turn up and take over.
always. And Vorders, what a combo.
Can I tell you a fact?
Go on.
Countdown was the very first show to be broadcast on Channel 4 back in 1982.
Yes. Yeah, everyone knows that.
I didn't know that fact.
I thought that was a good fact.
No, I've not been on Countdown. Although I did once have one of the little Game for a Laugh trophy things. But I wasn't on Game for a Laugh. So
bragging, as I put on my Instagram, I've got 2 Blue Peter badges.
Do you?
Yeah.
I've got one.
Oh, yeah.
I was annoyed that I actually put it on Instagram because I thought,
Do you suddenly get that? Have you done something recently for Blue Peter?
No, but I've been at my mum's house while the building builders are in. And then I found them and I was like, oh, yeah, God, I should, you know.
She got them a shrine to you.
I was going
to
say, do they give out Blue Peter badges for being at your mum's house when there are builders around, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yes, they do. No, I got it for artwork. Yeah, anyway.
Okay. Countdown.
Countdown.
Anyway, enough of my bragging about my achievements. Yes. So this show I watched this morning and I didn't take any notes, and James has obviously thrown to me, and genuinely I can't remember a lot, which I don't think it's a good sign.
I completely understand, because when I was writing the intro to this, I was like, oh yeah, what was this about? I watched it yesterday.
Yeah.
I cannot remember the plot because it was so wildly generic and forgettable.
Yeah, and so many characters, you know, different.
So many characters that you don't care about.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't really know what this show is about because it was so bland.
Yeah, it's just by numbers, isn't it? Really?
Oh my God. So this is a show written and shown by Derek Haas, and he's worked on loads of Dick Wolf's Chicago shows. Like, he's written hundreds of episodes of them. And those Chicago shows, and there are a lot of people who like them, but they are, I think it's fair to say, they are relics of a bygone era. Well, no, I'm not going to say they're shit. They may well be.
He's been provocative.
I'm being provocative.
But they are very much from another era.
But they are, by the way, if you look at the, you know, if you look at the ratings table on American television, network television, they are massive shows.
Yes, they are
biggest shows on American
television. There's no accounting for taste.
Indeed.
But this in a similar way, is also the relic of a bygone era, not because it's a kind of standalone procedural, which it actually isn't. It is serialized, but it's so like 90s, early noughties network. Like, it really is. Like, it's super bland. Like, there's the thing at the beginning where Milo Ventimiglia kind of gets into this awkward situation and the meeting goes badly. Everything from the music to the staging to the action is so like... So, and I don't mean this as an insult. It's massively sub 24, in that 24 is on a whole other level. But it's like,
I'm not dissing 24.
Yeah, I don't know why I'm mentioning 24.
I love 24.
It's sub third watch. Like, it's not. Like, it's not. Like, it's not in a million years. Like, 24 was great, but it's so basic. Mm-hmm. It's so from another era. And it's just like, this is the kind of thing where you might have watched it in 2003. Like, you might have done. In 1998, you'd be like, oh, yeah, it's all right, it's fine. But, like, in 2025, who is watching this?
Yeah, I agree. Like, thanks for helping me out. Because genuinely, I can't remember. My main thing is, and I think I can say this because it's not a spoiler, but within the first 5 minutes, Milo's a goner, right? And for me, he's such a massive draw. So then I was like, wait, what?
I don't even mention him. Yeah, it's like,
in a blink of an eye,
guest cameo killing.
He's gone.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, okay. And then for the rest of the episode, I'm like, God, because, you know, Milo's very good. He's like, he's a good actor, et cetera, et cetera. And so my interest immediately evaporated.
You weren't sold by McSteamy. And Jensen Ackles.
Jensen Ackles from Supernatural, yeah.
What I would say is, in the defense of that character, because he's like your quintessential knuckle grazer, whatever you call it, you know, like a very like testosterone filled doofus. But there's later on in the episode, you know, there was some development with his character that adds depth that I wasn't expecting. So I appreciated that. But yeah, other than that, I wasn't sold on this.
This, oh my God, it's so boring. I could barely pay attention. I mean, to be fair, I watched this as part of my late night viewing sesh last night after seeing a film, going to a party, and watching stuff that I had to interview.
Wait a minute, you went to the film.
Yeah.
You went to a party.
This was the first thing I watched when I got back. I thought, oh, this would be easy. I'll just get this done in, you know, like an hour, which obviously it's an hour long show. Oh my God, I could barely concentrate. It's so dull.
It is so dull.
How, you're like a machine. Party, a film, party, yeah. Two.
Double Piri.
Yeah, double Piri, and then this.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I started watching this on my iPhone. To be honest,
as the creator's intended.
I think it's better because it's smaller.
Yeah. Then I was watching it on a bigger screen, and it actually looks okay. I mean, you were talking about it's the production values are kind of are slightly above network TV that you were comparing it to,
but a little bit.
I'm giving it slight credit there, but you know, among the unbelievably tedious cliches of it, you know, this is the thing that's annoying me at the moment, is big action sequences, big fights done to like heavy rock music.
Yeah,
soundtrack is like, and you know, people punching each other, shooting each other. Like, oh, we don't need that. You know, just it's such a lazy thing to do.
The foot chase in this, there's a foot chase. Yeah. It is so lame.
It's so poorly staged. This show is like, oh, we're going to gather these people, put them in this team of people, and then they're going to each go around to do their own thing, which is intrinsically not interesting enough. And then they're supposed to, like, twists. You know when you get a list of... this is one of those shows where you were sent, as a critic, you're sent a list of things not to mention, of spoilers, basically.
Which is basically, I mean, your hit list.
to
mention.
But I was looking at it, I was thinking, oh, my God, I mean, this sounds more exciting than how they play out on screen, where you barely even notice that it's a twist. It's so tired and lazy and formulaic. It's like I could barely get through the first episode, let alone
one word.
And then instantly forgot everything about it. Yeah.
And this seems to be made for Prime Video, right? It's not like it's not even an acquisition.
Because I 100% thought that this was a network show that they bought.
No,
it is actually a Prime original.
It's production of Amazon MGM Studios. Yep. It's sometimes Prime Video. I mean, to be fair to all the streamers, not just Prime Video. Netflix is capable of this as well. Sometimes they just do such a lowest common denominator thing that they know this will probably be a massive hit.
I won't be
surprised.
The Night Agent was massive. And I'm not ragging on The Night Agent, but it was not exactly AAA television.
No.
But
I love this new thing of yours, AAA.
AAA.
I'm adding it to the list.
AAA television.
With a tonal elasticity.
This was not tonally elastic at all. It was just tonally boring. Terminally boring. Yeah. Oh my God. It was one of the most dull things I've seen in a long time.
Yeah.
What we're saying is, you'd be better off watching vintage episodes of Countdown.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, oh God, I'm
not even vintage. I watch Countdown now. Like Colin Murray hosts Countdown. It's a really good job.
It's good.
He's much better than any of the people on this show. I'd quite like to see a crossover. Maybe they could get, you know, Giles Brandreth.
Maybe.
That would be fun.
Dictionary Corner.
Plop him in the middle of LA. And by the way, it's set in LA. It doesn't even barely use LA, like, you know, as a backdrop.
It's not a character in this, is it, Richard?
Oh, my God.
It's not a character in it at all, no.
But you kind of wish it was.
Yeah, so Giles Brandreth, guest appearance maybe next time. Maybe I'll watch it again, but until that happens, no. Giles Brandreth, because he's in Dictionary Corner quite a lot.
Yeah, I mean, you know, allege.
Saying. Yeah.
Countdown then, Prime Video.
Well, if you want to watch it, guys, it's on Prime Video on Wednesday, the 25th of June, 2025.
Knock yourselves out.
Very good.
Finally, this week, we have got Smoke on Apple TV Plus, which marks a second Apple collaboration between Taron Egerton and Dennis Lehane after Blackbird. And this one is, as all great things are, inspired by a podcast. Not this one, obviously, but rather Firebug. And Edgerton plays an arson investigator who teams up with Journey Smollett's police detective to take down a pair of serial fire starters. Yes, twisted fire starters. Boydy, was this fire?
Yes, this is fire. I have a public health warning, though. I advise all people who are going to watch this show to avoid reading about it as much as humanly possible.
Oh, okay. That's a good tip.
Do not read Wikipedia. Do not listen to the fucking podcast or even read about the podcast or look at what the podcast that's inspired by the way, is the phrase I think they use, rather it's not adapted from. So it's kind of like, you know, that's an interesting distinction. But you need to know as little as possible about it going in, and honestly, it will repay, because I didn't, and it pays off because there are brilliant turns and twists and...
It's like The Crowded Room, where the whole thing was just absolutely ruined by even looking at the title sequence.
Exactly. It's not quite that bad. It's not quite that bad. But even acknowledging the influence of this podcast is a bit, like, spoilery in the end. But I loved it. I think Dennis Lehane and Taron Egerton have got a good thing going, because I really like Blackbird. I thought they did a really good job with that, which was a true story. This has elements, true story elements to it. But just the whole idea of this is, not only is he an arson investigator now, he's an ex-fireman turned arson investigator.
Wannabe novelist.
And wannabe novelist.
Please, I'm going to come to that.
Yeah. Right, the wannabe novelist is really interesting, which kind of provides a slightly meta... No, I really liked it. I think
I found it excruciating. No, carry on.
Toes actually almost snapping.
Curling so hard.
It's supposed to be partly
shrewd. It is. He's a terrible novelist.
He's a terrible novelist. Yeah, and that's the point. He is. It's part of his whole fascinating character that he is. And by the way, I'm going to say this now. You can cut it out if you want. But the opening starts with the narration of him trying to explain what fire is and keep changing it. And that is exactly, and it must be modelled on the start of Manhattan, the Woody Allen film, where he talks about describing why he loves New York, and he keeps having to start again with a new version of it, because it's very,
very
similar.
So you think it's an homage?
I think it's an homage to Manhattan. An unlikely, fair enough, homage to Manhattan, I'm guessing, from Dennis Lehane. But he's a really interesting character, and he's got this, and it's kind of got that, what is the thing about fire that so obsesses people? Mm. And he's kind of ended up writing about that, and his wife is like slightly disdainful of his,
Fair enough. Because she's got ears.
Exactly.
Yeah, she's read some of his work.
It's also, there's some really funny bits where he's supposed to be, you know, going off and helping the investigation, helping Journey Smollett's character, Michelle, who is brought in to help him investigate these two different arsonists that are within the same locale. And while she's busy doing the lev work, he's like tapping away, writing his notes.
Oh my God, Boyd.
But I think it's really funny.
No, wait,
it's
I'm really going to let you finish, and then I've got
stuff. Okay, fine. I was really intrigued by his character. And then you've got, like, this whole thing with going on with Journey Smollett's character having an affair. I'm not going to spoil too much, but that, I think it's fairly early on, isn't it?
She's having an affair
don't
with
say
someone.
Who, don't say who.
I won't say who. Then you've got Greg Kinnear as the boss, as Taron Egerton's boss, who is kind of like slightly difficult to... Is he being difficult or actually... Then there's a scene, because then I thought in episode one, I don't know how many you've watched, I've watched three.
I've only
now
watched one.
And in episode one, you think he's being quite obstructive and difficult, or won't give him enough money for this investigation. And he's kind of brought in Journey Smollett's character without Taron Egerton knowing. But then in episode two, I think, or maybe three, he suddenly goes round for dinner.
And they're hanging out.
And I'm like, oh, is it the same guy that was being difficult in episode one? So there's some...
People can change.
People people are complex. They could be one thing in one moment, another thing in another. And then what the show also does, which I found fascinating, it shows one of clearly the main suspects for one of the arsonist, serial arsonist figures. We get to meet this character and find out who they are and what their background is and what... So kind of half of it is an absolute whodunit, if you like, paralleled with how they've done it. We know they've done it. It's clearly you're telling us they've done it, and they're exploring why. So the whole thing is interestingly structured and unusual.
Because I thought, is this a red herring? Because why am I being told this?
Well, could be in theory. I've only got up to the point where... I mean, it's not. I don't think that's a spoiler to say they show you so much of that character.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's no point
they
showing you.
There are two serial fire starters.
Yeah.
And they show you who one of them is.
Yeah. So there's that, which is interesting. And then you've got one of the serial arsonists is obsessed with, starts setting all these fires in supermarkets. Supermarkets are back, by the way, listeners, if you enjoyed that earlier.
Yeah.
Transaction.
One's burning a Waitrose, just saying.
Yeah, they're burning the equivalent of Lidl and Waitrose and Tesco and all of these places. The arsonist doesn't care which supermarket.
Boy's vendetta against Tesco, get out of hand.
They have a vendetta against crisps.
Yeah, it's true. They are specifically burning crisps.
They start burning it in the potato chip aisle of every...
I'm furious about that. I love crisps.
Fascinating, yeah. Mm. Exactly. Who doesn't love crisps? And who knew that crisps were so flammable? So that's an interesting thing. There's loads going on, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And it's also shot in that brilliant Apple TV Plus style of kind of like, almost on the one hand, when it's like exterior, it's like gleaming... Almost like the cinematography has this kind of like clear clarity. Mm.
They have a cinematic sheen. Yes,
which is brilliant. And then you've got quite creative ways that it's depicting the fires in quite scary, terrifying ways. Mm. And by the way, I mean, I would say there's some really horrible like burn victim stuff going on in this, which I think needs.
Yeah, it's quite gnarly.
It's really quite gnarly if you're squeamish about that kind of thing. It's quite out there. I think Taron Egerton does a brilliant job in it. I think everyone in it is great. Is excellent. Rafe Spall pops up in it, by the way. One of the least spallish, Rafe Spallish characters he's ever played. I love it because I'm always there for Rafe Spall. Mm. And I absolutely love this. And it's full of extraordinary things. That's all I'm going to go and say. Yeah.
I don't disagree. I enjoy this. But I've just got to tell you, I watched this straight after 8 episodes of Department Q. So I sort of really reached my limit of, sort of these lead male characters with these egos that are treating their colleagues in a certain way, particularly female colleagues, and talking down. And I'd sort of like, are we here again already so soon? I'm not looking at either of you two. I'm just saying. as an observation about watching two dramas with a similar kind of lead character treating people a certain way. But I thought Edgerton was great. I did think that. And I thought it was I enjoyed the whole thing. But Boyd, what are you thinking in terms of... No, I
didn't
disagree.
Make this.
No, I know.
Yeah, Boyd, what were you thinking?
No, this whole writing the novel thing.
Oh, no,
okay?
I love the writing the novel thing.
I could not stand that. And... Right. First of all, he narrates he's narrating his words, he's writing this novel about a fireman. It is super naff, yeah? Then he like starts reading bits to his wife and stuff like this, as if she's just like, you're not a writer, please stop. But also what I found is, A, it's cheesy and naff, but for me, it took me out of the drama because you get all these dramatic moments and then suddenly you see him like toilet scribbling away, like he's the bard, right? I don't know, like a smoky Shakespeare or something. I was like, stop with this.
But he thinks he is being that, but we know he's not. It's supposed to be cheesy.
Yeah, but it's distracting. I think it's distracting from the main drama because, like, if this was all going on, in this massive investigation and it's so tense and, is he genuinely the next scene just going to be like, and then there was a fire? I don't think he would. I don't know. It just didn't ring true.
But the thing is, it's almost like an old sort of like hardboiled thing. He'd be like, and he looked at her and he growled with a vengeance in his eyes. And he does it in this really gravelly voice because he dictates it into his phone. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm dying. I'm dying.
It
you
was
know
superfluous.
How sensitive I am
think
to
he
cringe.
Needed it.
It killed me. Those sequences killed me. So I didn't like them for that because I found the cringe incredible, especially because at one point he's doing it and then there's someone standing behind him and he does that really slow turn around. How long have you been standing there?
Yeah, fair enough. Like, because he's embarrassed.
Yeah,
Have
you got to the bit where the publisher phones?
No.
Oh, okay. All I'd say is watch a bit more because I think There's a moment that I'm trying. I'm not spoiling it. But
I think that's the bit that I'm at. So I'm three quarters of the way through the second episode.
Yeah.
Now here's the interesting thing. I knew you really liked this because you obviously broke the cardinal rule of the podcast and spoiled it on a recent episode where you said that you loved it.
Sorry.
And I was looking for the thing that you loved about this, and I thought it was good. Don't get me wrong. I think it was great. I was fine. Like, you know, I was like, but maybe there's still something to happen. You talk about big developments. I maybe haven't had one of the big developments. Something fairly big has just happened. But I'm like, okay, I haven't got the end of episode two, so I'm going to give it to the end of episode three to see if I can see in it what you see in it.
Yeah.
Because at the moment, I feel a bit like I did with Blackbird. I'm like, oh yeah, this is good. Will I watch any more of it? Could go either way. But, you know, decent without being stellar.
I sort of agree with you, James, but I would say that for me, like, the biggest draw was Jurnee Smollett, her character. I thought she was really interesting because she's sort of like, I mean, she's had her own trauma, etc. She's going through a lot and she's living on her own terms, particularly in terms of relationship. In that way, it kind of reminded me of Department Q and Merritt, you know, and I liked that about her and I liked their partnership and the sort of power struggle at the beginning.
She also does stuff that is like, she's desperate in a lot of ways. So she's driven to do stuff that is utterly ludicrous for her to embark upon,
should we say. But more ludicrous than writing the novel and
I mean professionally, yeah.
Okay, fine.
You have to get to the end of episode two. That's the key.
Yes. All right. Okay. Well, I will definitely do that.
And
I will press on
to
episode two. Because it is good, but there's a, you know, and it has that sheen and it's got great performances and, you know, and Lehane knows how to write script, but there's also a simplicity to it. It is ultimately a kind of a mismatched buddy cop investigation drama, and so I'm still waiting for the thing that will distinguish it.
It will.
Okay, good. Right.
Also,
Boydie has laid it on the line. I will update you next week whether or not I feel that is true.
Also, I was fascinated by the perpetrator and the methodology and the motive of it. Like, that's interesting.
Yeah, I would say that. I would go as far as to say that where they place certain moments, developments in the story is so interesting and kind of unusual. So that's adds to the whole
such
thing.
A tease.
Yeah. He is. He's such a tease. Mm. Smoke, then.
Which is on Apple TV Plus. Friday, the 27th of June, 2025. The first two episodes dropped together. So, yeah, you get, yeah.
Watch both and get to the end of episode two, apparently.
Yeah.
Okay. Super. What else is out this week, Boydie, that we missed?
Oh, well, it's a big week because for embargoed. It's a big week for embargoes.
Yes, it is.
The Bear is back on Thursday on Disney Plus.
Embargoed.
Yes,
embargoed. Haven't sent out screeners yet.
Yeah. Ironheart landed on Disney Plus.
Ironheart.
Big new Marvel show.
Yeah.
Embargoed.
Disney Plus, Wednesday, 25th of June, embargoed.
Yeah. Little show called Squid Game.
The biggest show in the history of Netflix is back.
Embargoed.
For its final season, Friday, 27th, embargoed. Haven't sent these screens to me. Rumour has it some people have got screens. furious. The Gilded Age is back, which I think is one of your favourites, Kay.
I do enjoy it.
The Julian Fellow. It's the Downton Abbey.
That's
it's
right.
The American Downton.
All very Regency. Is it Regency era?
It's Regency era. It's set in the same time as the Buccaneers.
Yes.
In fact, I think it's set literally almost the same year Buccaneers, yeah. Which is slightly odd. But it's got a great cast. Carrie Coon, the great Carrie Coon from season three of The White Lotus.
Christine Baranski.
Yes.
Christine Baranski. Cynthia Nixon, recent interviewee on this very podcast, of course. That's back. And that's about it.
We should say, these are some big shows and some big embargoes. So we're going to work out exactly how we're going to navigate this. Squid Game, I think we're going to cover on the main podcast next week. That will not be on Plus. On Plus, we will either do Ironheart or The Bear or Ironheart and The Bear, or one of those might end up going to next week. Frankly, we haven't sorted out the logistics, but suffice it to say, we will be tackling all of these shows, even though we weren't able to in time for this episode.
Correct.
Yes. But more importantly, what is our pick of the week? Kay.
Smoke.
Hey. It's Countdown. You know it is.
Do you know what? I'm going to plump for the comedy.
Transaction.
Yeah.
Okay. For me, it's probably Smoke at the moment.
Yeah.
Definitely Smoke. Don't let the writer thing get in the way.
Okay. It is Smoke, but I would say give Transaction a go.
Okay. Fantastic. Well, that is it for this week's show. If you enjoyed it, as always, do give us a 5-star rating on whatever podcast platform you can. We very much appreciate it. And also, subscribe to Pilot Plus and and buy tickets, no matter what country you live in, buy tickets to see us on August the 8th at King's Place for our 350th show. We will be back in your ears next week when we talk about Squid Game and one or more of the other shows we weren't able to do this week. What else is happening this week? Next week, Kat Sadler's going to be on the podcast next week, as we mentioned, for Such Brave Girls, and The Sandman returns.
Oh, God, yes.
Which could be an interesting one to talk about.
Bloody hell.
And it might be embargoed. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it is.
It is embargoed.
Yeah, okay. Yes, so we won't be talking about that next week anyway, so that's probably for the best.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, super. Well, we're done. Finished. I'm going to go off and begin my crime novel.
Oh, God.
Pilot out.